Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours.
Mitchell Osman, such a pleasure to have you on today. I am so excited for this conversation. How's it going up there in Canada?
It is going well, Sandy. Thank you for having me on the show. I can't wait to talk with you and your audience today.
Yeah. This is such a great conversation. So for the audience, Mitchell Osman is a trusted advisor, leadership consultant, executive coach, and a very successful podcaster. His podcast is called Dad Nation. And he speaks directly to men who refuse to settle, those high achievers who want to lead their families with the same excellence they bring to their careers. And we're going to dive into all of this. But first, tell us a little bit about your story, because you do have an interesting story about how you got here and why this mission is so important to you.
Oh, thank you for asking. And I think that's a great place to start. And, you know, really what I do at the end of the day is I help high-performing men reclaim their home, their health, and their happiness, right? And so a lot of what I talk about is marriage, is about fitness and about our minds, you know, and how to take our thoughts captive. But, you know, it's funny because I'm the kind of coach who has lived it. You know, I come from a wild sort of story, which I'll share with you. But a lot of people ask me about my turning point, you know, what that was, where all this started, you know, and I would say there's two. You know, the first one was a fight. The second one was a funeral. Okay. So the first one being the fight, it was with my wife. We were sitting on the couch in our living room and it all hit the fan. You know, we were fighting over, I believe it was money or something, and that spiraled into something else. As if you're listening and you're married or been a long-term relationship, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But you know, at this point we had been married for about 3 years, and it was a hard 3 years of struggling. It was tough. And this fight, this day was our rock bottom. And we fought all the time, obviously. But I knew that this one was different. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I couldn't fix it. And deep down, I knew that if something didn't change, then my marriage was going to be over as I knew it, you know. So, but to give you some context, I was always in leadership positions, you know, in my life. And that was something that made sense to me. But I had recently been let go from a leadership position. And then my career was everything, right? It was my calling, it was my identity. So I spiraled into this season of depression. I gained 60 pounds. We were like over $100,000 in debt. I was medicating with drugs and alcohol, trying to kind of cope with the state of my life. Yeah. And I was getting dangerously close to divorce. And the thing was, you know, business made sense to me, growing organizations, like leadership, you know, building teams, but you know, it all made sense professionally, but why couldn't I figure my life out personally, right? I felt powerful at work, but powerless at home. Maybe your listeners have been there, you know, and to back it up even more, you know, I came from a dysfunctional upbringing, right? I had a non-existent relationship with my father, you know, alcoholism, drugs, crime were just littered throughout my home growing up. And I knew where I came from. And I knew that if I wanted something different for my life and for my family, then I need to change something. But I felt myself getting pulled back into the same ruts and the same routines. And I would yell at my wife and I could hear my father's voice. I could hear his words in mine. And it was like I was two different people, you know? I would just show up at work powerfully and I come home and I was stuck in this trap. I knew I was called to more, you know, but I didn't necessarily know how to get there. I knew I was destined to create or to break this generational curse because my father's father was an alcoholic and his father was an alcoholic, but I just didn't know how. It was never modeled for me, you know, to have an amazing marriage or to have a healthy body and, you know, all those different things. But I knew how to check out. I knew how to numb myself with booze, weed, and, you know, whatever else, because that was modeled for me, you know. And so, you know, about a week after that giant fight we had, I was like, I was still struggling. And the second, this is where the funeral part comes in, the second moment for me, the defining moment. See, I was invited to sing at this funeral for this wealthy philanthropic man, okay? And there was about a couple thousand people there. This man was incredible, and he had all kinds of accomplishments and all that stuff. And as the minister was wrapping up his talk to the people in the room, he had asked the question to the crowd that shook me to my core. And he said, "Are you living a life worthy of imitation? If you were to die tomorrow, would you be proud of the legacy that you left?" And as I began to prepare to sing the last words of those, that song, to close up the funeral, I could barely choke the words out, because all I could think while I was singing was, man, if this was my funeral, no one would say he inspired me to have a great marriage, or no one would say he inspired me to get into better shape, or he inspired me how to grow my health and my wealth, all those different things. They would probably say at that point, he struggled and it was over, you know? And so at this funeral, this is what people did. They told stories about him. This is what we do at funerals, because that's all we have left. So I left the funeral that day determined to rewrite my own story, because the first chapter of my story was my childhood, and that was tough, right? It was kind of sad. The second chapter of my life was when I got married, and up to that point, it was a real struggle. But right there and then, I committed to writing a new story, not just for me, but for my wife and for my children. I decided that in order to become the man I needed to be, I needed to die to the man who used to be, right? And so what I did, you know, Sandy, at the end of the day, I mean, I realized, and you know this, if you want different results, you have to make different decisions. You have to learn how to think differently, or else you're going to keep getting the same thing. This is the old, you know, a definition of insanity, right?
The vicious cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. So I made commitments. I surrounded myself with other men who were living where I wanted to go. These men, like, my ceiling was their floor, you know, so they taught me everything I needed to know. And more importantly, they showed me what was possible for myself when I didn't believe in myself. And it was honest, it was raw, and it was real. And Sandy, within a year and a half, okay, 18 months, completely restored my marriage, paid off over 100 grand in debt, lost the 60 pounds, restored my health. And most importantly, I was clean of substances. My mind was pure and focused. And so then that's what I started to do. I started to rewrite new chapters every single day. And then I started helping friends around me, you know, who were struggling either financially in their marriage and their fitness and all that stuff. And then eventually someone had challenged me and said, "Hey, if you really want to have impact, start a podcast, tell the world your story." And I thought that was a little bit ridiculous, but I gave it a shot. And then within six months, I had listeners all over North America. And then they started reaching out and saying, "Hey, could you help me? Do you coach? Yeah. Do you have anything? Do you sell any courses?" And I was like, "Well, no, but I guess I could." And so I started to help men professionally. And basically in the same areas that I needed help. And I love Ed Milet says, you know, you are most qualified to help the person you used to be.
That's right.
And so within 18 months, I launched and scaled a six-figure coaching company, and I've just been helping men all around North America do just that, restore their marriages, show up as more present fathers, get clean of addiction and bad habits, and break free from limiting self-beliefs and help, you know, the self-sabotage. A lot of my clients are business owners and entrepreneurs, VPs, all those different things that have been just excelling professionally but struggling personally. So that's kind of how I got here in a nutshell.
Wow. Wow. I wrote down so many things that I want to circle back to.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, generational curse. Those things that happen that are passed down from generation to generation. I'm so proud of you to even recognize that there needed to be a break in that generational curse. I experienced the same thing when my son was a baby. And with me, it was being beaten. Mm. Okay. And when he was a baby and he was crying and I couldn't get him to stop, I had so much angst, and there was a part of me that wanted to just throw him, right? Mm-hmm. And I had him in my arms. I set him down in his crib, and I walked out the room. And my husband was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I felt like I wanted to hit him." Mm-hmm. And he's a baby and I can't do that. And I was like, I have to break this generational cycle of abuse that's in my family. Fast forward 8 years, we're in the pediatrician's office, and this old guy, he's like, I can tell you've never hit this kid. And I go, no, I haven't. He's like, well, you need to, because he's not listening. I actually had a pediatrician tell me that I should be hitting my child. And wow. I was like, I looked at him and I go, no. So like for me, that was such a defining moment, because if I even once started, you know, everybody has their own decisions that they want to make. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with certain discipline if you're swatting your kids on the bottom or whatnot. For me, because I was experienced physical abuse from my father, I had to break that, because I didn't want my son, because then my son would most likely, he would then do it with his children. Mm. So that's such a huge thing. And I wanted to just emphasize that, because I want to give people to think about, I want people to think about that. In what ways, you know, are you behaving, you know, especially modeling young men, mm-hmm. which is what this conversation is all about. You know, is really what we want to do is have fathers really be there for their dads or for their children, mm-hmm. rather. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love that you did that. Futures, I wrote down future self, because you were thinking at the funeral, that question.
Are you living a life worthy of imitation? Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's a powerful,
you know, that
question.
Was your future self came in and was like, Mitchell, excuse me, let's shake this up. Let's shake mm-hmm. this up. Can you just dive into that a little bit more? And what was your thought process when you heard that? And how did you keep that motivating you, you know, mm-hmm. still to this day?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that the more we think, it's a little bit morbid, but the more we think about our death, the more it informs us on how we ought to live.
Absolutely.
And I thought,
I don't think there's anything, it may be morbid, but it's reality. We're going to die at some point. Yeah. That's our reality.
Yeah. Right. And yeah. I knew that, I don't know, Sandy, like, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but I just knew it's not working. And if I don't change, I'm going to turn into my dad, just as he turned into his dad. Right.
Right. That's right.
And so I thought, you know, and I thought in the moment, do I want to be divorced? Do I want to add another 60 pounds? Do I want to continue in debt? Do I want to lay on my deathbed with nothing but shame and regret and remorse for how I live? Do I want to raise a son who is exactly like me? You know, I don't think so. But we know that there's a high likelihood that our children will become, you know, they're definitely not going to, they may not always do what we say, but they're definitely going to do what we do, right? And so for me, you know, that was a question that shook me. And I base a lot of my coaching around that. Is, you know, Stephen Covey says in his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, chapter 2, it says, begin with the end in mind. Napoleon Hill, begin with the end in mind. You have to begin with the end of where you want to be in mind before you even begin the journey. And so one of the things that I do with my clients is we go through a eulogy exercise. And I say, I'm going to get you to write your eulogy as your wife would write it today if you die.
Okay. As your wife would write it. Wow.
Yeah. And I want you to read it. So if your name is, you know, Jason, okay. Jason was a good man. I loved him, blah, 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 you know, or write it from what your children would say about who you are today. And then I want you to write the eulogy version 2 of what you would want them to say. Okay. Now that gives you a real clear picture of where you are and where you want to be. And that in the gap between who you are now and who you want to become, that's where the tension lies. That's where men carry that anxiety and depression and frustration, because they're not living up to their full potential and what they're called to be. And so that eulogy writing exercise draws it. It just makes it real visceral. And I regularly have men they write it and they read it to me and they're just in tears. And then they read it to their wife and they read it to their kids and they say, this is the man that I want to become. Can you hold me to that standard?
Oh,
you know,
nice.
And I get them to get men around them. I call them the Iron Five, men who are going to hold you accountable and hold your feet to the fire to make sure that you are that man, husband, father for your family. And so that's why, you know, that question, are you living a life worthy of imitation? Because at the end of the day, I know now that when I draw my last breath, whenever my time is up, that I'll be able to do it with full peace. Because I'll know that I did everything I could to live a life that was worthy of imitation. Does that make sense?
Totally. And I love everything you just said. And I hope that the men out there listening and women, because this applies to both.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's golden nuggets. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. You said, and this really hit me. I wrote this down. This is so profound. because you were talking about having mentors and, you know, it's like modeling, you know, find that person that's has the success that you want and, mm-hmm. and do what they do, right? I mean, they've been talking about that, but I love how you approached it. You said, my ceiling was their floor, like mic drop moment, right? Wow. I don't think I've got goosebumps. I don't think I've never heard anybody, maybe they've said it, but it just didn't resonate. Mm. That's really, really incredible. And what a great barometer, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And that's what I did, you know, at the end of the day, Sandy, is I reached out to people who, because I didn't, okay, to give you context, you know, I was working in the trades. I was renovating houses. I was working 3 part-time jobs trying to make ends meet. I was stressed out and I was exhausted. I was working on the house of a man who had multiple properties. And I just, I saw him coming in. He was driving a Porsche. And I said, hey, man, I don't know you, but your house is beautiful. And I see how you live. And you're an inspiration to me. Would you be willing? This is crazy. I know this is a moonshot, but would you be willing to just meet me for coffee like once a month or even once a quarter and to just kind of share with me how you've lived because it seems incredible and show me how to get my finances in order? And so I did that. I reached out to the people in my, you know, within 1 degree of separation in that were succeeding in, you know, whatever area that I needed help in. So for me, it was my fitness, my finances, my marriage. And my overall like addiction, my tendencies, all that stuff. And then my spirituality. And those 5 men are the men who exactly did that. They, again, they're my ceiling. The best I thought I could do was their floor. That's where they started. And so they held me up and they let me break. They showed me how to break through the ceiling.
That's incredible, Mitchell. That's incredible. Because here's the thing. I totally just forgot what I was going to say.
It's okay.
That's what happens the older you get. You're like, I'm like, so like, into, that's why I take notes because I'm like, I will forget what I actually wanted to say. Oh, what I was going to say is men, especially, I'm going to hold it. I think men, especially more than women, if you approach a successful man, they will be more likely to mentor another young man. And I think that's really true, that men are more willing to give their time to help other young men. I do believe that. I do believe it because it's that fatherly instinct that that men have. It's in your DNA.
Yeah. Well, think about it. So I say this all the time, you know, with my coaching clients, you know, and a lot of them are they're not even young men. They're like, you know, middle-aged men. And I say, well, what's stopping you from reaching out to these 5 people or whoever it is for you? And like, well, I don't want to be a pain in the butt or I don't want to be a burden. I said, okay, well, let's flip the script for a second. Can you tell me a time? And I would ask them, can you tell me a time when someone reached out to you and said, hey man, would you be able to give me a hand with this? You seem like you're really smart. You seem like you really got this figured out. Would you be willing to just grab a beer or grab a coffee? And I said, and they're always like, yeah, of course. I remember when they asked me that. I said, how did that make you feel? Did you think, oh, this guy's just a pain in the neck? Or did you actually think you were actually flattered and humbled that they would ask? He said, well, yeah. And I said, did you even consider maybe making room in your schedule to spend time with this guy? And they said, well, yeah. I said, so what makes you think that you would be any different from someone ahead of you? That's because right. Here's the thing. No one ahead of you is going to criticize you, you know, for where you're trying to go. They're going to want to help. That's and right. You know what? The people behind you, who cares what they have to say? Because they're not going to be where you are going to end up, right? So it doesn't matter. So reach out to those people because you know what? Get over the ego, get over the pride because they'd be happy to help you if you would just be willing to accept it, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's the big thing is like people don't want to ask because they do feel like they're being, you know, or they're imposing or whatnot. And here's the thing that you recognized from that funeral. You said 5 people, you know, they've done studies. Like we are, you know, who are the 5 people that are closest to you in your life? Like that's going to define who you are, the people that you're spending your time with. So do you want to spend your time with the people that are going to happy hour every day or spend time with people that like, well, let's go for a run after work or let's go to the gym or like, you know, you just have to decide who do you want to spend your time with? Because those people that you spend most of your time with, you're going to become just like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, yeah, you're not going to evolve and grow.
Yeah, we know that to be statistically speaking, I believe the statistic is like, if you're best friends with a smoker, you have a 67% chance of becoming an addicted smoker. You know, there's statistics around obesity and so many different other things. That's just the reality of where we're at. You are made up of the 5 people you spend the most time with, right? And so, again, remembering, if you are a father and you're listening to this, you need to understand that we know that if you have a son, he will become the man that you are. We know that this to be very true. I've seen it in my family. I've seen it in my clients' families. You know, it is what it is. If you have a daughter, she will grow up to crave the attention from a man just like you. And so you need to understand that if you want your daughter to bring home a great man one day, you need to model that greatness so she knows how to recognize it in other men when she sees it for herself. And that's on us. You know what I mean?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. And men also will teach their daughters and their sons how to treat other people as well.
Absolutely.
How to, you know, a man is going to show their son how to treat their wife. Mm-hmm. A daughter is going to see how the dad is treating the mom, and you're going to think that it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's no wonder that, you know, my biological father was highly abusive, and then I turned around and married somebody like that.
Yeah. Happens all the time.
Of course. Of course. Of course I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad was an alcoholic.
Because that's what you think is normal.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. My dad was an alcoholic. My sister grew up and married alcoholic after alcoholic. Yeah. You know, that's just, he did time. She did time. You know, like, it's just, it is what it is. And so, you know, and I say all that to say, I feel like I've been coming down a little bit hard, but I'm just really passionate about this. So I want to couple this conversation about the importance of, you know, stepping up as a man with some sobering statistics, if you don't mind, Sandy.
I would love this because I have them up right now on your website. You have it on your website. Yes. But yeah, those statistics are pretty mind-boggling.
Well, yeah. And if you're listening today, I want you to understand that you matter, okay? In the U.S. today, 1 in 4 kids will grow up without a father in the home. And so while some parts of society will say that men don't matter, I believe that the numbers say otherwise. Okay, so these stats are going to blow your mind. 63% of youth suicides come from fatherless homes. 90% of homeless and runaway children come from fatherless homes. 85% of behavioral disorders, children with behavioral disorders, come from fatherless homes. And 71%, that's like 7 out of 10 of high school dropouts, come from fatherless homes. So what's the truth in this message is that our kids need us, that our spouses need us, the world needs us, and we need each other, right? We know that we're more isolated than ever before. And so you can step out and get the help you need, but what you are doing matters. How you show up matters, right? You carry a significance in the home. It's our responsibility. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, Sandy, but I say this often. It's our responsibility as fathers and as husbands to be the thermostat, not the thermometer. Okay, well, what does the thermometer do? A thermometer reacts to the temperature in the room, and it just like reflects what's going on in the room. So if you come home and your wife is stressed out and the kids are freaking out, you know, and then what do? I don't have time for this. I had a crazy day. You know, why don't everybody calm down? What's wrong with you guys? And they start losing their mind. No. Your responsibility is to be the thermostat. You set the tone in the room. You come in and be the calm. Your presence should be a healing balm for your family, a calming, soothing presence that just relaxes everybody. You know, I tell my clients all the time, sometimes your most important job is to be the lowest heart rate in the room. Walk in the room, say, how can I be the lowest heart rate in the room? How can I bring calm? Because what you carry matters. It's huge.
Wow. Well, it's a scary thing. And sadly, my son, at the age, it was 2 weeks after his 13th birthday, his father was driving drunk and was in an accident and 2 people died and he went to prison for 7 years. And fortunately, I was already with my current husband. So he did have a male role model in his life, though he didn't want it, right? Because he was already a teenager. He was just kind of like, he's not my dad, you know, kind of thing. But it was, talk about, I lived for years in such a state of fear because one, I didn't want my kid to end up in jail. Mm-hmm. Because his father was in jail, there was the chances of my son doing something and going to jail were so much more higher than everybody else because his dad was in jail. It's just that whole thing. He did have ended up with some anxiety disorders and things like that. You know, I'm proud to say that, you know, he did graduate high school. He made it into college and he finished college. And so I tell you, like for me, that was a huge success because the odds were so much against us, you know. And now, you know, his father is home and, you know, he's a successful lawyer and he was before and he is again, you know, and he's thriving and he and his dad have a great relationship and whatnot. And that's a really good story because there's so many other versions of that that could have come into play, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you know, this was another reason why I wanted to talk to you today because it is such a big deal. It is such a big deal. And I know, you know, my ex-husband, who's an amazing man, we're like brother and sister. You know, we were horrible married together, but we're great parents. And he made a horrible mistake. And, but, you know, like, fortunately, you know, even from afar, he still tried to be there for my son, you know, but it's a really, really big deal. It's a really big deal. And I can't stress that enough, how important it is for men to just like you said, step up.
Yeah.
Step up. You've got a huge responsibility.
Yeah. And I think a lot of men don't, you know, there's a few different reasons why, you know, it goes that far. And, you know, if you're listening to this today and you maybe some of these things sound a little bit too familiar to you, you know, or maybe you're wondering, man, maybe I'm guilty of some of these things, or maybe I'm not, maybe my wife isn't fully happy in our relationship, or maybe I'm not being the best role model for my kids or whatever. It never hurts to just do an assessment and reach out and then connect just to see, because, you know, statistically we know that 7 out of every 10 divorces in the United States are initiated by women. Okay. Now in situations where the wife is an educated higher earner, that number jumps to 90%, 90% of divorces are initiated by women. What does that tell us? It tells us that we got some work to do. And I say that in a lovingly respectful
way.
But that's why I'm here, because it's so many men don't necessarily even understand, because we struggle with emotional awareness and emotional intelligence and understanding actually what's going on. And then they wake up one day and their wife is unhappy, or they get filed the papers or whatever. And they're like, what? I thought everything was fine, you know? And so it's an important conversation. And it's important to be aware of, you know, what's going on, because you matter. So,
well, and the thing is, I can already hear a lot of them saying, oh, well, this is how my dad was. And it's like, yeah, let's break that generational curse. And, you know, the thing that I always think of, and I, thankfully, because I did not have a very good childhood, you know, lots of childhood trauma, and I've done a tremendous amount of work dealing with that trauma. And that's a lot of the work I do with my clients is healing and removing and neutralizing. I like to say neutralizing the childhood trauma.
That's good.
Yeah. But what I every single day I had with my son, I remembered that he only has one childhood. That's it. That's it. Good. Only one childhood, you know, and he turns 25 this year. Like, and it went by like that. It went by so fast. And so for the men and women, you know, your kids, they get one childhood. That's it. Let's try to make it the best you can. And that starts with you, right? It starts on the inside.
Yeah.
Totally on the inside. Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, Sandy, time is the only currency we spend without knowing the remaining balance.
That's right. Ooh, you just keep dropping these golden nuggets today, Mitchell. That's another mic drop. Can you repeat that, please?
Time is the only currency that we spend without knowing the remaining balance. Right?
Mic drop. So, that's huge. Yes.
Well, and that's the thing. You don't know. Like, I spent an hour hanging out with my son before I jumped on this call. And I thought, I might have 60 years left. I might have 60 minutes left. I better make these next 60 minutes count with him, because I don't know how much I have left. So I will not waste my time, and I will not check out, because the best gift I can give him is my complete undivided attention. Because I know that my time with him, the vast majority of my time with him is going to be when he's an adult, not when he's going to be a child. The amount of time he's going to be a child is this, going back to what you're saying. Right?
That's right.
And I'm not raising I'm not raising a child. I'm raising an adult, right? I need him to understand, and I need to be fully present. Even as a young kid, he needs to see what a present, focused father, what a loving father looks like. Is I actually, if I'm honest, I don't know how much time I have left to spend with him. And if we could only live with that kind of urgency in how we spend our time, we'd show up so much more powerfully.
Yeah, well, Mitchell, I turned 60 this year. Okay. And my son turns 25. And I just said it went by like that. So where do you think my mind's going? Oh my gosh, the last 25 years have gone by like this. 25 years from now, I'm going to be 85. Like, like you think of that and you're like, holy cow. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on the other side of that. It's like, wow. Like talk about not knowing how much time we have left. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I can honestly say that the time that I spent with my son, with him growing up, I cherished every single day. I really did. You know, I left the workforce. I stayed home with him for 10 years until I finally reached a point where I had to divorce his father.
Yeah.
Like that was affecting our lives. Like I had to divorce them. And I did, like you said, I was the one that initiated it. And I can honestly say that the time I spent with him was just precious. And it still was never enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't enough. Yeah. It wasn't enough, you know?
Well, and you're living, you know, me and my wife were saying this the other day, we're sitting on the back deck in the sun and my son was like whining and he was just like, it was just being so difficult. And I was like, I started to just wish that he was older. Right. And
it's normal.
Yeah. And I started to wish that these days would be behind us. And the reality is that when I'm 85, I will trade everything, every That's dollar right. I have to be back into this moment. You know, that's what I was telling my wife that moment. In that moment, I'm like, when I'm 85, I'd give up everything I had to just come back here.
That's
and
right.
So I'm not going to wish these days away. I'm going to be fully present because this is so precious, right?
It is.
We're living in the good old days, as they say.
Yeah. I still have baby pictures of my son all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I will always have those because I don't want to forget, you know, like I look at those pictures and I'm like, oh, you know, I have one behind me right there. The first time he played putt-putt golf, you know?
I love it.
And he was like three. And it's like, it's just the cutest little picture. And I look at it almost every day and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So, it's precious.
And this weekend, my husband and I are going over to help him put together his coffee table.
Wild, right?
There we are, you know, right? But, you know, but yeah, that it's great like now because the time that I do spend with him is so precious. And he's, you know, when I worked in corporate, I was in recruiting and my son is in recruiting. He chose not to be a lawyer like his dad. And he's in recruiting human resources, which is what I was in. And, it's so great because now he can call me and talk to me about his job, you know, and I can totally relate to it. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
I love that.
You know? Yeah. Oh my goodness. All right. So talk about your podcast. So when people go to your podcast, the Dad Nation, mm-hmm. Dad Nation podcast. What can people expect when they go to there? What do they expect to hear?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, call the Dad Nation podcast, and essentially we just talk about all things that men, husbands, and fathers struggle with, you know. And like I said, it's all based around things that I coach my men in, which is home health and happiness, or mindset, you know, marriage and fitness. And so I bring in globally experts,
oh, okay. Influencers. I was just about to ask that.
Yeah. Okay. People, some of the best of the best. I've had neurosurgeons. I've had, you know, all kinds of like nuclear submarine, you name it, man. I've had people here. I have had people on the show from all walks of life. And that's what we talk about, you know, everything from how to have an incredible marriage, how to maximize your time, you know, to 10x your productivity. You know, so there's a lot of business stuff in there as well. We talk about, of course, fitness and healthy living. We've had a lot of incredible fitness experts on there, and how to show up more powerfully as a father, how to rewrite, you know, your past, which is huge for us, and how to get refocused in the present and reshape your future. You know, there's tons and tons of stuff. And before I forget, you know, Sandy, for your listeners today, I do have a free gift that I want to give them.
Oh, beautiful.
That can help them in their marriage. So don't let me forget that. But yeah, that's what you can expect when you watch a show. Like we said earlier, there's, you know, it's globally rated top 10% podcast, and we have listeners all over the world, and regularly have men reach out over an email, and sometimes even their wives. Like, I'll have wives who listen to the show in order to find out how they can connect with more deeply and understand their husbands. And I'll regularly get emails from women and being like, hey, this was so powerful. Like, I learned this practice from you to connect to my husband, and it worked, you know, or whatever. So yeah, jump on, listen to the show. It's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You know, if you just Google the Dad Nation podcast, you'll see my face there. And you go to the website, it's all there too at dadnationco.com.
Love it. That's such a powerful must listen to message and podcast. So thank you so much for doing what you do. So talk about your free gift.
Yeah, I mean, it's real simple. It's just 50 of my favorite questions. So remember, you know, as we're talking about, you know, as husbands, or as, you know, men in a serious relationship, the reality is most women need to be connected to emotionally, right? Mm-hmm. Now, men go to the physical often first, and then they get to the emotional after. Well, women are the opposite. You know, they need to be engaged emotionally before they can be engaged physically. And so we're fundamentally wired on a different level. And there's a lot of reasons for this. But for lack of time, then I'll just say that it's important for us to understand that the way to your wife's heart is through connecting with her in deep conversation. It's connecting with her emotionally. And so I've taken 50 of my favorite questions that will spark the fun and bring the fire back. And you can ask those questions to your wife on a date night, or when you put the kids down, you know, turn the phones off and just have a good conversation, pour up a glass of wine, you know, connect, whatever that looks like for you. It's just called the Connection Code, right? 50 questions to spark the fun and get the fire back. Real simple. And if you just go to, and I'll give you the link so you can put it in the show notes, but if you go to dadnationco.com/code, you can find it. And it's real simple, real practical. I mean, guys, you know, men are typically very tactical, and we need tools and systems. What can I do with this? How can I grab a hold of this and do something with it? So that's exactly what this is. I'm like, hey, take 5 questions, ask her on your date Friday night. And then Tuesday night, when you put the kids to bed, ask 5 more questions from the list, you know? So it's a real practical tool they can use.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And yeah, I'll make sure I get that. I'll make sure that gets into the show notes as well. So
yeah,
beautiful.
And here's the thing, you know, maybe your listeners can relate to this, but in marriage sometimes, especially for guys in leadership, it's like date nights begin to just feel like board meetings with wine. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you show up and you're like, okay, what do we need to do? The kids, we got to drop the kids off. We got to do this. How's the budget? Da, da, da. And you're just walking through an agenda, you know? And so this takes us from, you know, board meetings to back to date nights, or you go from roommates to soulmates. That's essentially what this God has helped you, designed to help you do.
Love it. Love it. Also, women don't want you to fix it. We just want you to listen to us.
Yes.
I'll say to my husband, now I just know I've learned how to communicate with him. And I'm just like, okay, I don't want you to fix this. I just need you to listen to me. I just need to vent.
Yeah.
And you can see him like sitting on his hands, just butt, like going like this, like trying so hard not, because he just wants to fix it. And I'm like, I don't want you to fix anything right now.
Yeah.
Just hear me. Just listen to me. That's all I need.
Well, and I tell my clients all the time, I'm like, you know, for men, I'm like, listening to your wife when she's had a hard day or something going on, sometimes can feel like you're standing in front of this giant house that's on fire. And you got this water hose, right? Full fire hose, fully charged, and you'd be like, I can turn it on. I can put the fire out. No? Okay. You just want me to, you want to stand here and watch it burn. Okay. And so you just got to sit there and watch the house burn. That's what it feels like for us on the inside, right?
I'm sure.
And so what I tell men is like, just a simple, practical thing. Listen, when you come home and it's clear that everyone's a little dysregulated, you know, maybe your wife's had a crazy day or whatever, and she's coming to talk to you, or maybe it's after the kids go to bed, preface the conversation with saying, hey, is this something that you where you would like me to help you fix it? Or is this something where you just want me to listen? Just two options. That's it. You know, and my wife is like, oh, thank you for asking. Yeah, no, I don't need you to fix it. I just want you to listen. And honestly, for us, it's like, oh, pressure's off. I just listen. That's easy, right? Or she might say, yeah, actually, you know what? I'd love your perspective on this. Could you help me fix it? Yeah. And you're like, okay, game on. Let's go. Because men, we need a mission, right? So we're going to turn it into a mission. But it's just that preface, that clarifying question can save a blow up in itself, right? Yeah. Because what happens if you don't get that clarity? Then your wife is starting to talk about frustrated, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, hey, why don't you think about it this way? Why don't you do this instead? Here's 10 reasons why, you know, she's like, I don't need that. Well, I'm just trying to help. That. Well, I don't need you to help. And then, of course, we get into a fight, right? So,
you know, communication is the basis of every healthy relationship. And as long as you're communicating, Oh, my goodness. Mitchell, this has been such an amazing conversation. And thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for being on this mission. And you dropped so many amazing nuggets. And guys and gals, like, listen to this podcast. It sounds like it's absolutely amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And if you don't mind me adding, Sandy, if you're listening to this and, you know, maybe you're the kind of guy you need to take action. You know, you feel like, you know, you need to get the one-to-one action. Feel free to jump on a strategy call with me. And in the intake form, just write that, you know, you heard about me through this podcast. And I'll just make sure that I show up on the call to connect with you personally rather than someone from my team. So I want to make sure that we get to make a personal connection. Because you might be listening to this and you're like, no, I want to take action right now. You know, I'm in a situation where I want to do that. So that's, if that sounds like you and the, as we're talking, there's a fire kind of in your belly, then listen to your instincts, you know. But otherwise, like I said, there's three ways to connect with me. There's three ways that I serve men really at the end of the day. There's content, there's courses, and there's coaching, right? The content is the podcast. The courses is something called the High Performance Husband, which is basically everything in my brain into a program that they can take for, you know, just self-guided tour or else, you know, coaching. So.
Love it. Awesome. So incredible. Thank you so much. And best of luck for everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today. This has been a powerful conversation and I love what you're doing and I think it's amazing.
Oh,
and so, it's so good to meet you. And I hope that I've added value to your listeners today.
You have. And I'm grateful that I was able to get you in before I stop interviewing because I only have one more interview left after you. And this was such a powerful conversation, just like you said. And I'm so grateful that we were able to get this done and get it out there because it'll be out there forever for everybody to listen to. So, all right. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And I hope that you and your family are happy and healthy and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, and a really strong man in your life. Take care, everyone.